Welcome to Let's Talk ETFs. I'm your host, Jonathan Liss, and I've been closely tracking the ETF space for more than 13 years through a variety of roles here at SeekingAlpha.com. Each week, a different guest and I will take an in-depth look at a particular aspect of the rapidly evolving exchange-traded fund space, with a focus on how investors can best utilize ETFs to reach their investing goals. Before we begin, a brief disclaimer. This podcast is for entertainment and educational purposes only. Nothing said here should be taken as investment advice. All opinions expressed on this show are those of the individuals expressing them alone. A full set of disclosures will be included at the end of this show. You can subscribe to Let's Talk ETFs on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or whichever podcast platform you prefer. For reference purposes, this podcast is being recorded on the morning of Wednesday, January 20th, 2021, Inauguration Day. My guest today is John Bartlett. John joined Reed's Asset Management in 1995. He was named president of the firm in July 2019. John is a co-portfolio manager of the Reeves Utility Income Fund and co-manages the Virtus Reeves Utilities ETF, ticker symbol UTES. He also specializes in the equity analysis of utilities companies. He received his BA from Connecticut College and is a CFA charter holder. All right, let's get into it, John. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, thanks, Jonathan.
It is great to have you here. For the first show we're doing, this is something in the low 70s in terms of episode numbers. I think it's going to be 72, if I'm not mistaken. First show we're doing fully focused on utilities. And frankly, I think it's about time. I think the moment in time we're at right now is a pretty interesting moment for investors to be thinking about this space and to be thinking about how Reeves handles this space, particularly with both your exchange-traded fund and your closed-end fund. Before we get into that, though, I'd love it if you could just tell our listeners a bit more about yourself. When did you first become interested in investing? And how long have you been doing this for, and in what capacity? And then what drew you to utilities specifically?
Sure. Well, I can say that I've pretty much been interested in investing for really all of my life that I can remember. I had a grandfather that was a professional investor, and he really cut his teeth in the very beginning of the Great Depression. It was just not an auspicious time to be a professional investor. You know, my uncle and my father, his sons, neither of them pursued that field directly, but they were always very enthusiastic amateur investors. And so, you know, that was sort of what I was shaped by. The big mentors in my family life, my grandfather, my father, and my uncle, really, you know, that's what was important to them. And that's sort of what became important to me. As time went on, I guess I started buying common stocks for myself sometime in my late teens, early 20s, something like that, late high school, early college. And I always sort of knew that I wanted to be invested, you know, be involved in investment management somehow. I found Bill Reeves during college, actually, and he gave me a summer internship. After college, I went somewhere else for a little while, and he invited me back. And kind of the rest is history. I'm going to start my 27th year next year, and it's been a really wonderful place to spend a career. I really found utilities through Bill Reeves, and you know he was a gentleman who worked for Kidder Peabody and ran their utility practice in really the heyday of utility expansion in the 50s and 60s. He hung out his own shingle in the early 60s and started managing money in the late 1970s. And so we've got a pretty proud history at our firm. We've been doing this a long time. And, you know, the partners at the firm today have all been doing it a long time together. So it's, you know, we're a fiercely independent firm. We have a lot of pride in doing things on our terms. And we think that we've really found something in utilities and really been, as I say, a great service to customers and a wonderful place to spend a career.
Nice. It's really a great story. And spending 27 years at the same place, I think, in you know, any walk of life, but particularly in employment in your job is, I think, a testament to an organization. So that's definitely says a lot about Reeves as an organization. So let's start out by defining the utility space. The sector is generally broken into three groups: gas, electricity, and water. How big is each of these groups in terms of market cap and revenue? Roughly how many different publicly traded companies are we talking about in each of these spaces? And then anything else you just kind of want to put out there at the beginning in terms of general background on the utilities sector?
That's fine. There's lots of people who define utilities in different ways. We have an actively managed exchange traded fund, and the ticker symbol for that is UTES, UTES. And, you know, that strictly falls into the lines of what you would think of a normal regulated utility. For our closed-end fund, which trades under ticker symbol UTG, the Reeves Utility Income Fund, that takes a bit of a broader view with respect to utilities. And we include telecom there as well, communications infrastructure. In fact, we would include the broadband services and wireless services as well there. As far as the size of the space goes, it's not a very big part of the S&P 500. It's only about 2-3% of the S&P 500 at this point is the S&P utilities. The market caps vary greatly, all the way down to maybe a couple of billion dollars, all the way up to NextEra, which is our 100 plus billion dollar company. I'm not exactly sure what the market cap is of late. Stock has been growing like a weed, and it's probably meaningfully more than that now.
But it looks like, just pulling it up here, 162 billion as of this morning.
Right, there you go. So I wanted to say 150, I would have been wrong about that too. So that I think gives you a pretty good sense of the space that we're dealing with. And I would also add, you know, because utilities are a fairly arcane part of the stock market, and they aren't really that big a part of the stock market, a lot of investment managers do tend to punt on it as far as we're concerned. And I think one of the advantages that we've had over the years is really focusing on the space in the way that it ought to be, at least in our opinion. So, that's really part of what we do is follow actual utility companies and utility regulation.
Sure. And just in terms of, so listeners can understand the differences between the closed-end fund and the exchange-traded fund, are you able to take a wider look at the sector in the closed-end fund because it doesn't track a specific index? Or so people understand, UTES is also actively managed, correct? So why are you kind of circumscribed by those very limited regulated companies in the case of the exchange traded fund, and in the closed end fund, you're able to look beyond that to, as you said, telecom and broadband and some additional sectors there?
Sure. Strictly speaking, we're not, but that's sort of the way that we've laid things out. We decided to go the actively managed exchange traded fund route in the beginning, mostly because we felt that there wasn't an adequate ETF out there in the space. And we also found a situation in which if you looked at the market cap of XLU, which is the S&P utilities sector spider,
sure,
it was grossly larger than the sort of 2-3% of the total sector spider shares outstanding. So we thought that there was a pretty good demand for it. I've gotten a lot of phone calls from folks saying, hey, you know, I want to get involved in utilities. I want to do it passively. And is there a good product out there? And we kind of felt that there was an opportunity. So really we're trying to go toe to toe with the sector spider in the ETF. And we're really trying to provide a vehicle for folks who just want a pure utility exposure. Now, the investment mandate for UTG is a little bit different. Now that's a standard closed end fund. And the objective there is to maximize monthly income and to do it in a way that can provide growth over time. And if you look at the dividend history of UTG, not only do we pay a big dividend, but we've also increased it on a number of occasions since we got started in 2004. On that one, we use leverage, and that the low cost of borrowing that we enjoy today helps us boost the dividend. So it's two sort of very different approaches. One has the mandate of the big monthly dividend, and the other has the mandate of just beating a utility benchmark.
Sure, makes sense. So speaking of performance of the sector broadly, the last year in particular has not been very good for utilities investors. Looking at XLU, at the Select Sector Spider ETF's performance, just because as you mentioned, that is really the kind of 800-pound gorilla of ETFs and utilities focus in particular. That fund on a total return basis is down about 1% over the previous 12 months versus 10% total return for the S&P 500. And what's worse, it's a sector that generally has lower beta or less risk, quote unquote, than the broader market, that did not appear to hold over the past 12 months. So the drawdown was essentially the same 37% during that bear market, COVID bear market of February and March, as the broader market, which means you didn't necessarily get to sleep better at night, and yet you still got particularly worse returns. So what's your outlook in terms of the riskiness of utilities going forward, and whether investors can expect to see some sort of a reversion to the mean there?
Sure. Well, let me just begin by saying I'm not a big fan of mean reversion as a concept. I mean, I think everything in this world happens for a reason, and that reason might be right or it might be wrong. But just because it happened doesn't mean necessarily that it'll unwind. But obviously, on your point, it often does. I actually, when I look back at 2020, I think it was even more frustrating than what you've just sort of run through. And let me kind of take it through from the top. Traditionally, over long periods of time, the most important indicator for utilities has been the dividend yield. When you look back over time and you run regressions between bond indexes and utilities, you'll find that the R squared, and that is the percent contribution between utility performance and, I'm sorry, I should say utility dividend yield and treasury yield, is about 90%, right? So it's really the first order impact into how utilities are doing is typically, what are interest rates doing? So when we look back at 2020, if you were to say, hey, look, utilities, we're going to have the second best earnings comparison in the S&P 500. We're going to have the 10-year treasury get cut in half, the yield, that is. We're going to have corporate spreads tighten. What kind of year do you think utilities are going to have? And, it doesn't even really end there. We really had a great outcome as far as the presidential election is concerned. So there was really no problem there. And it really begets the question of what happened. And I think part of that is tied up in just sort of how the year shaked out. And, I think you can easily draw a dividing line between, vaccine before and after. You can draw another dividing line between, the start of COVID before and after. There was a good bit of noise that happened along the way that really kind of took away a little bit at some of the sponsorship that utilities had enjoyed previously. And let me kind of just run through all of that stuff. I'll try to be quick about it. Well, what happened when COVID started to spread was that there was a credit crunch. And that credit crunch was addressed, as I think we're all pretty familiar with now at this point, by the Federal Reserve in a fairly dramatic way. And corporate bonds recovered very smartly. It was, as from a funding standpoint, the problems were resolved fairly quickly. Now, what happened to utilities was that they went down, not necessarily with the stock market, but coincidentally. And what they did was really go down more with corporate credit. Now, because the Fed was so targeted on corporate credit, junk bonds and things like that really outperformed utilities on the way back up. Utilities recovered, but they didn't recover quite as quickly. Fast forward to June. Utilities, if you looked at the utility chart for the year, the whole year, you'll see a big decoupling from
for corporate bonds that happened in June. And what happened there was actually kind of curious and really speaks to the sort of the new world that we live in. And that is, because utilities got whipped around so much by credit, they wound up being a lot more volatile than they are generally relative to the stock market. And as a consequence of that, all of the factor-based investors found themselves in this situation in May, where the trailing 12 months of utilities were no longer the least volatile stocks. And so all the people who had bought utilities for their low volatility characteristics had dumped the stocks in June. So for instance, SPLV, the low volatility fund, really went from a very large position in utilities to a negligible position. Now that's a big fund. And it sold out of its utilities literally over the course of the day. Now, fortunately, the market making community kind of knew that was going to happen, but it was, you know, that was something that really weighed on utilities in June, and they never really kind of peaked up again. So we continued to roll along, and utilities did recover, and they did regain their step, and they did get some correlation back to the corporate bonds. But then we had the vaccine, and all of a sudden, interest rates backed up some, but people really got excited in the stock market about going after things that were cyclical, about going after things that were small cap, and things that were very much geared towards value. And again, utilities really didn't participate in any of that, and kind of got left by the side of the road. So there were a lot of things that were out there that really conspired against utilities in 2020, and it was a very frustrating year. What I am hoping is that things will settle down. Utilities will, you know, resume their rightful place as some of the lowest volatility stocks in the stock market. And maybe, you know, funds like SPLV will be ready to buy the utilities back again. And I'm sure they'll bid them up. But anyway, that's just the way that fund flows work. This was a year where fund flows and investor preference for investment characteristics really trumped the fundamentals. The stocks, the companies themselves had a fine earnings year. You know, they didn't really hit a bump at all with respect to COVID sales or anything like that. The companies that we expected to raise the dividend. You know, the predictability of earnings remains very high for these companies. And, you know, again, I can say with pretty good certainty that my estimates for a couple of years out really haven't changed a lick as a consequence of all the water under the bridge in 2020.
Sure. I mean, and it makes sense in terms of the earnings remaining stable, that this is really the epitome of something that is necessary in all environments. People still need to heat their houses. They still need electricity. They still need water. And so it makes total sense that the earnings wouldn't have really been hurt that much. I guess the bad news for investors that stayed fully allocated to the sector in 2020 may very well be good news going forward. So what is your current view in terms of, and keeping historical valuations of the sector in mind, and historical yields relative to what the 10-year Treasury is paying? Well, what's your outlook right now for 2021 and beyond? Is this the right place for investors to be, maybe even to be overweight, or is there still likely to be more of the kind of factor focus and shifting going on? You know, we're still seeing a shift towards consumer cyclicals, obviously, towards small caps, towards companies that people thought maybe weren't going to make it to the other side of COVID, that now appears they will. And so investors seem to be embracing those kinds of plays. So what's your view of utilities right now in this current moment?
There's a lot to unpack there. You know, utilities can do different things for different people. Obviously, you know, if one wanted to kind of walk through the mechanisms of a trading story, we could do that. The other thing I would say too, another way to skin the cat is, you know, I tend to look at utilities as a bond substitute. You know, we've got lots of customers, me included, that really use utilities to keep out of fixed income or to supercharge, you know, the bond portfolio that you might have. You know, we're in a low interest rate environment, even though things have backed up a little bit. And I still believe that these utility stocks are better than bonds. And, you know, I think, you know, taking out the long duration corporate exposure in lieu of utilities, adding utilities in lieu of long duration corporate still makes a lot of sense to me, given the yield advantage that you have, and as well as the opportunity for growth year in and year out in the event that, you know, interest rates back up and prove to be a headwind. So I'll just sort of lay that out as preface here. As far as the outlook for the stocks relative to their prior valuation, you know, there's plenty of good stocks that are trading at 15, 16, 17 times forward earnings. This is at a time where, you know, where corporate spreads are very tight, where the 10-year treasury yields 1.1%. By every historical measure, that's really that's trading cheap. What tends to happen, and I think it's happened this time, is that when investors get excited about the economy and bond yields work their way up at the long end of the curve, utilities really get tagged. And we saw a lot of that in December and into this year. And as long as interest rates don't get an additional leg up, what tends to happen is that utilities settle out and can actually enjoy some outperformance off the overreaction. And that's sort of where my head is right now. I don't see interest rates getting ahead of us. I don't fashion myself to be a great interest rate prognosticator. The good news on that front is I've got the treasury market, which is the sort of broadest and deepest market on Mother Earth here. So I let that do the heavy lifting for me. And from where I sit, utilities look very reasonable relative to interest rates.
Yeah, sure. And it's hard to see how rates could go up too much further at this point. It would create all kinds of issues if rates went up too much. For starters, I think Uncle Sam would see the amount that it pays out of the annual budget go towards paying down debt get to an unacceptably high level. And so one has to think that they're going to find a way to keep rates relatively low and you know, not too much higher than they are right now for the foreseeable future. In terms of energy prices in general, and sure listeners will be somewhat curious about this also, do they have a say at all in the performance of utility stocks, whether the price of oil or natural gas is moving upwards or downwards? Does that actually affect the earnings of these companies in very meaningful ways? Or are things regulated to the extent that investors don't really need to pay attention to things like energy and oil and gas prices when they're evaluating utilities?
It really depends. And it matters by business, and it matters by state in which they do business. Utilities are largely regulated by the states, not the federal government. And different utilities have different types of exposure. Let me just say, to begin with, occasionally you can see big swings in the crude market affect, or at least be coincident with certain utilities, notably gas utilities. You know, there's probably not a causal relationship to that. There's probably, you know, a few different things happening at once where, it might seem like there's a connection, but there's really no connection at all. A well-managed utility passes on all of its commodity expense to its customers. And so let's just take the most simple example, which would be your local gas distribution company. When the price of natural gas goes up, it affects, you know, they pass it on to you. And intellectually, anyway, you would think that there would be no harm done to the utility. But as a practical matter, you know, we never want to see bills go up because, you know, utilities have to earn the right to grow. And they grow by investing in their plant and equipment. And in order to get recovery on that incremental investment, they have to go to the rate to the rate regulator and ask for a rate increase. Well, you know, if there's been a big step change in the price of the of natural gas, that becomes a little bit more of a difficult political proposition. So there's no impact on utility earnings theoretically, but it it gets in the way of commerce. I think maybe that's the best way to put it.
Sure. Interesting. So you had mentioned earlier that the result of the presidential election, or maybe the election entirely, maybe you're referring to the way that that Congress ended up swinging, also would not have been problematic for utilities at all. We're speaking here on Inauguration Day. And Democrats now control both the executive and the legislative branches, something that I think most people would have considered highly unlikely even a few months ago. What are your expectations around the regulatory environment under a Biden administration and Democrat-controlled Congress? Republicans obviously picked up some power at the state level, so it probably is worth addressing that also. But, you know, just tell listeners whether this actually makes a difference or not, and how they should be thinking about this sector.
Well, far and away, what goes on at the states is most important for utilities, and investors often lose sight of that. And I would say that, you know, people outside the industry place a lot of gravity on what's going on in Washington in terms of the sort of local utilities. That said, it makes a difference, and it makes a difference in a couple of ways. And this election will probably make a little bit more difference than it usually does. The first thing that I would hit would be tax reform. And I have no idea where that's going, but it's worth talking about for a second. If corporate taxes go up in America, that hits the bottom line of just about every corporation that's out there. Obviously, real estate investment trusts that don't pay corporate taxes would be a conspicuous exception. Utilities are an exception as well. And the reason they're an exception is because they can recover the increased income taxes through rates. And there's really, it's actually a two-step process. The first, of course, is that the tax rate goes up, they can increase their taxes by a similar amount, and net income gets made whole. Now, like the increase in commodities that I just talked about, even though they're made whole, you know, we kind of lose something from a practical standpoint because rates have to go up. And again, we don't, utility regulators often don't recognize this, but shareholders don't like high rates either, and they don't like rate increases as well. So even though we're getting made whole, we're losing something. Now, that said, step two gets a little bit more arcane because utilities tend to depreciate things for tax purposes much faster than they do for book purposes. A lot of corporations are like that, but utilities even more so. And so there has to be an adjustment for the future tax liability associated with depreciated assets. And as a consequence, rates actually have to go up a little more than you might think. They don't, utilities don't book earnings on this, but they do get cash flow, and it does make their life a little better. And so, you know, when we kind of look back to the experience under the Trump administration when they lowered corporate taxes, utilities were hurt relative to the rest of the stock market because the rest of the stock market got a tax break and they didn't, but they were hurt further because it affected their cash flow and their credit quality. Mm-hmm. And there were some utilities that actually had to sell some equity in order to stay a step ahead of the rating agencies.
That's interesting. So really kind of the opposite of almost every other publicly traded company in terms of how that dynamic plays out. It's really fascinating. Moving over to another topic, which I think is specific, and this obviously gets controlled at the state level to some extent, but I think policy is controlled a lot more in Washington, and that is the move to clean energy, caps on carbon emissions, and all sorts of other policies that attempt to combat climate change. Obviously, we're not having a political discussion here, but I don't think there is anything political about the science around it. And the reality is that the Democrats are way more likely to reward companies that move to cleaner energy. They're likely to try to pass legislation around this, I think, relatively soon. Now, obviously, the utility sector has been moving a lot in this direction already. So if you could just take listeners through the development, what things looked like maybe 15 or 20 years ago, where they are today, and then where you think things are headed in terms of further adoption of clean energy within the sector, and what this particular president and Congress might mean for utilities companies that are at the forefront of that move.
Let me just begin by saying the United States hasn't ever had an official energy policy, but lots of individual states have and do. And the states themselves, particularly those on the coasts, are very far along in developing their own energy policy towards renewable adoption and stuff like that. And many states have renewable portfolio standards for utilities and are really, you know, mandating adoption here. And part of that is because it's fairly straightforward and easy to do when, you know, I think really for most of the Midwest now, it's cheaper to generate power from wind than it is from natural gas. And it's well on its way to doing so on an unsubsidized basis, which is pretty neat. Offshore wind is still fairly expensive, but it has characteristics that can be folded into a utility grid reasonably well enough. And so, you know, if you're the state of New Jersey, which is where I live, you know, it's a wonderful opportunity to develop a wind asset in a way that you wouldn't be able to do onshore. So states are really moving along with this. Now, that said, I don't see the United States ever developing an energy policy. That would just, there's so many different interests in the United States that it would be hard to cobble them together into one cohesive or coherent policy. But there are some things that are going to be really interesting to see over the course of the Biden administration, see what happens and how they happen. The first, of course, is electric transmission. Electric transmission is a regulated business in this country, but it's deemed to be interstate. So it's regulated by the federal government. And that's typically been very supportive regulation. But one of the issues that inevitably comes up with transmission is cost sharing, right? So if you're a state with low cost renewables, why would you want your ratepayers to pay incremental money to build incremental transmission for the sole purpose of taking away all of your cheap renewable generation, right?
Yeah.
These are real issues that are going to have to get sorted out. And that, I think, is going to be the one of the big legacies that this administration can give the country. If it chooses to pursue it. You know, obviously extending tax credits, providing support for technology, maybe even providing support for hydrogen technologies and things like that. I think they're all going to be, you know, part of the game plan. And, you know, it's sort of early days. Wind and solar onshore and wind offshore continues to grow like a weed. So that's happened and will continue to happen regardless of what's going on in Washington. But getting more transmission will be really helpful to get, you know, to position all of the states to get the renewable transition that they need in the most economic fashion.
Sure. And it almost sounds like, not that you're making any particular investing call here, but it almost sounds to me like, in addition to utilities themselves, the publicly traded companies that actually create all of this renewable infrastructure seems like they're going to have more and more contracts to build out these projects for utilities. So it seems like that may not be a bad place for investors to look either. Obviously, you're not able to hold those kinds of companies within your funds, correct?
It depends. We invest for outcomes, and the outcome that we're looking for And I should have hit this a little bit harder earlier on to give, you know, when he would ask me about my outlook. But all things remaining equal with respect to utilities, I think it's reasonable to expect our kinds of companies at the least risky end of the spectrum to grow their earnings around 5 to 7%, pay a dividend that's about 3% or so that's growing coincident with earnings, and deliver investors a return of, say, 10% right out of the box. And if we can do that with a beta of 0.4 or so, you put that through CAPM, that looks really attractive.
Yeah.
That's the real basis of what we're all about at Reeves. And I would say that in that context, there's lots of stuff that we're interested in. We all, you know, people at Reeves, we pay attention to all the stuff, Enphase phases and Plug Powers and Ballards and things like that. We will go further up the risk curve, but we won't go all the way there. We're conservative investors, and that's what we do. Now, that said, you know, obviously this gives some evidence of my bias here, but my personal opinion, and I guess professional opinion, is that utilities are really the best way to play renewables for most folks. And, you know, I think most investors start the conversation saying, oh my goodness, look at this energy transition that's going on before us. How can I get involved? What can I do? Well, there's lots of high octane stuff that you can buy. But if you invest in a utility that's got good leverage to this, then you have the opportunity for a backlog of investment without taking all the technology risk. Remember, you just wanted to get involved in something with leverage to energy transition and the moving away from fossil. Utilities are a great way to do that because you don't have to take the technology risk. You're making a specific bet on energy transmission, on energy transition, and you're doing it in a very low beta and measured way. Now, that said, when you look at the folks down the street who've bought Enphase correctly, you know, you might get a little jealous, but realize you probably took a lot less risk, and you've got a better shot, in my opinion, for the outcome that you're looking for. Remember, compounding every year at 10% per year is pretty good stuff as far as we're concerned.
Yes, absolutely, and especially that beta of 0.4 that you mentioned is a nice cherry on top of that cake. So in terms of, just to stay on this topic for a bit longer, the growing popularity of ESG investing, obviously it's already become massive in Europe, and it's starting to gain more popularity in the US. Do you think that this will be a tailwind for the sector? And just in terms of your fund in particularly, I was just taking a peek, and your MSCI ESG quality score is significantly higher than XLU's. I don't know if that's by accident or what the story is there, but if you could just touch on that a bit also.
Sure. Well, we have big positions in some of the ESG darlings. I mean, the NextEra, I'm sure, is right up there. All three letters of ESG are very important to us and always have been. We don't have a formal ESG policy per se, but we've really never felt the need to. And that might change over time. We need to get a little bit more comfortable around metrics. These metrics are all important to us because we really want to buy utilities that can provide political victories to their regulators. And the most important thing a utility can do is to either keep the regulator out of the newspaper with bad news or in the newspaper with good news. And Of the three initials, E right now does appear to be the most important for utilities because that's sort of the most easy to measure. Mm-hmm. And varying companies have varying abilities to convert the generation stack to a less emitting alternative, you know, really de-risk themselves from a sustainability standpoint. That's pretty straightforward. We kind of touched on some of those things. But the S and the G, in my opinion, utilities bring a lot more to the table than most people appreciate. Utilities on the S side are very large employers of veterans. They're very large employees of really every single portion of the population. A good utility always, always reflects the values and all the people in its service territory, and the employee roles of utilities always reflect that, and not just with the guys who drive the ladies and gentlemen who drive the trucks, but also with the people in the C-suite as well. And I think diversity in utilities is really a strong point. As far as governance goes, I've been doing this a long time, and governance has improved dramatically. It used to be you could figure out the probability of whether or not a utility was going to sell itself by the age of its chairman, and whether or not he wanted to have a fat retirement. That's long gone. The utility business used to be a lot more clubby. It's now much more professionally managed and much more transparent. And I think a lot of these companies pay a whole lot more attention to their shareholders, frankly, than they ever used to.
Interesting. So I'd like to finish up here by drilling into the way you manage utes specifically, because I think this is kind of the bread and butter of the conversation to many listeners, being able to make an intelligent, educated decision when investing in a specific sector fund like a utilities fund, and what particular issuer is bringing to the table. Why did you go with active management, and why in your feeling does active management make more sense in the utility space than having a rules-based index, which doesn't really allow for much flexibility?
Mm-hmm. Active management is what we do, and it's sort of what we're about. And really understanding these companies and understanding the regulators and understanding the politics is really what we're about. We don't peddle intelligence. We don't peddle science. And while we're all, smart, capable folks, what we really peddle here is experience and a legacy of how we look at utilities in a manner that can really be leveraged for our customers. And so for utilities, the details really matter. And we in fairness, people may laugh at us because we care, financial data to, what's to the right of the decimal point in a way maybe you wouldn't in a big cap company. But sentiment matters, regulatory trends matter, and none of those things can really be picked up by sort of a mechanical way of looking at utilities, at least the way we do it.
Sure. In terms of the management style of the fund, how much of the selection process would you say is quantitative versus qualitative research? How much turnover are you seeing in the portfolio, and how are you determining things like positioning sizes once you make a decision that a company has made the cut?
Sure. There's a lot there. Let me start with the simple stuff. And that is more so than anything else that we do, at Reeves generally, we are very concentrated investors, and generally speaking, the top 15 names represent about half the portfolio. And our aspiration in utes is to do pretty much the same thing, but that said, we do have a bit of an issue because some of the stocks that we really, really like are a huge part of the index. And so one of the things that people really first notice is the concentration of positions that we have in the portfolio. And so we have lots of positions that hover around the 5% range, and we have one position that's nearly 25% of the portfolio. And that position is NextEra. And the NextEra position really isn't any more complicated than wanting to have a 4%, 5% overweight in the stock. And that's what's required in order to get there. At some point we probably will dial that back because of large numbers, but we've really been content to just let the security run. And, I think if we went back to the very beginning of, of Utes, it's probably was in the low double digits. And now it's, you know, here we are 24%. And we just haven't touched it. We haven't wanted to, because nothing is, the stock hasn't done anything wrong, except continue to achieve excellent results. So
yeah,
we're kind of happy to leave that alone. But I would say, I'd concede that we're probably getting to the point where we need to, we need to do something. So that I hope gives you a sense of kind of the position sizing. You know, we are a relative value shop, and we think that if we can buy one like company, you know, that's at a below than fair value, and we believe that there are reasons that situation can change, then that's what gets us excited about a stock. And we are probably most, I guess, likely to lighten a position when we believe that the position has expressed itself and, you know, has something across the horizon that that might cause the shares to perform badly, or at least underperform over a period of time.
Sure. And how much turnover generally would you say there is in the portfolio?
Well, one of the reasons that we took the strict utility approach into the ETF was that is the part of our portfolios that tends to have the lowest turnover. And so I don't know what the number was for 2020, but generally speaking, you know, Utes has the lowest turnover of our firm.
Sure. And I'm sure that plays into the tax benefits that exchange traded funds offer. Generally, how has the fund looked from a tax management standpoint? I think the misnomer about actively managed exchange traded funds is that they often are less tax efficient than index ones. I don't think that there's actually any evidence to support that. If you could talk about Utes specifically and whether there have had to be taxable events or distributions at the end of the year and how that's played out exactly, I think that would be great.
Yeah, we like not paying taxes, and it's more important to us that you know, our shareholders don't pay taxes. And personally, I don't like paying taxes. You know, as a shareholder of Utes, I appreciate not paying taxes. So all of that said, we have paid capital gains taxes in the past. We have made capital gains distributions out of Utes in the past. I can't really prognosticate, of course, what we're going to do in the future. But one of the things that we're really looking to try and do is something that's really actually already common practice in the ETF world. And that is, and you're probably more familiar with it than I am, but we're kind of working towards it, is to do things with the market makers in order to sort of smooth the blow of having to sell out your low-cost stock.
Sure.
And there are things that ETFs can do, and especially, you know, as the fund ages, we're going to need to do more and more of that because, you know, quite frankly, we have, you know, a good bit of return under our belt at this point.
Definitely. In terms of comparisons to, let's say, XLU, if you could just point out a couple of key differences that investors should be aware of, just in terms of what you get with Utes that you don't necessarily get with XLU, or just what's different, what would you point to specifically?
Yeah, well, we have much more concentrated holdings than XLU. We tend to have a bias towards lower cap stocks, even though we obviously have the big NextEra position. And I think what investors should expect from us is a more thoughtful portfolio than XLU, and hopefully a portfolio that delivers better risk-adjusted returns over time. We're out there, you know, we go to work every day, though our commutes are all shorter now.
Yeah.
You know, we go to work every day to beat the index. And so, you know, if we can't do that, then frankly, in my opinion, what's the point? So that's what we expect of ourselves. And, you know, what shareholders should expect, I think, would be something similar.
Sure. And yeah, I guess just to drive the point home in terms of differences. So XLU, the weighted average market cap is over $55 billion. You're looking at an average price earnings ratio of 24, price to book ratio of 220. On Utes, you're looking at a weighted average market cap of just under $50 billion. Price earnings ratio of 35. So definitely some interesting differences there in terms of how the portfolios shake out.
Yeah, I would say in both cases, actually, some of those earnings numbers probably need to be adjusted. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that on a forward basis, you know, the portfolio probably has a high teens type of forward PE as opposed to, you know, 35.
Yeah, no, makes total sense. If there's, let's say, one position inside of Utes right now that maybe is less familiar to investors that you think really has an opportunity to drive the portfolio forward in the coming months and years, what would it be if you had to, let's say, pick one name to discuss? I'm sure you're excited about a bunch of them, but if you had to drill down to one in particular.
Well, look, you know, we love the NextEra family, but that's really more of a function of continued growth as opposed to, hey, let's, you know, what stocks in the portfolio have the opportunity for a real re-rating? And, you know, as far as the stocks that are in the portfolio that have a chance for a re-rating over the next 12 months, I think the gas distribution companies really have the best chance there. And that said, that's going to take some patience and it's going to take some time and it's not going to happen overnight. But the real poster child for a stock like that would be Atmos Energy. Atmos has really been left by the side of the road. It is a company that just raised its dividend 9%. It's growing like a weed, yeah, in my terms, which is, you know, probably around 7% in terms of its earnings per share. And, you know, it's got a real dividend yield. And, you know, that company has got a sort of a mid-teens type PE, which doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me, given its growth characteristics, given the quality of the regulation that you enjoy in Texas. But people, you know, there's a school of thought that says, hey, you know, nobody's going to want anything with any kind of fossil fuel exposure. We've been through this before. There was a time, and you might remember, where everybody felt that rooftop solar was going to put the electric company out of business. and that didn't happen.
No.
Natural gas isn't going anywhere. We really need it. And these companies deliver it to people. They don't drill. They don't frack, that sort of thing. So it's a business that's not going away. And it's a business that grows only... Well, it doesn't grow by customer count. Atmos in particular, 80% of their rate base and earnings growth is from just doing work to their existing system rather than bolting new customers on. So, you know, it's very, very predictable growth in replacing pipeline as opposed to adding customers and growing sales that drives the growth of these businesses.
Nice. Definitely a name to keep an eye on. Anyway, John, this has been terrific. I definitely learned a ton here myself. I'm sure many of the listeners have also. Where should investors go to find you online? People that want to keep on researching everything we've been discussing today, what's the best place to do that?
Well, we've got our own website, and the URL for that is Reaves, reavesam.com. We've got our closed-end fund has its own website called utilityincomefund.com. But nice. I would point people to our main website first. We've been doing a lot more writing and trying to be disciplined on getting the you know, kind of current events out there and things that we're seeing in the marketplace. So there should be some good sources for folks out there.
Yeah, and definitely a lot going on around the sector right now. So I'm sure you're covering that from multiple different angles.
Yeah, we are. It's always interesting.
Yep. Anyway, hopefully not too interesting. We could probably use a little less interesting after the year that we've just had. John, I want to wish you luck and success and health in the coming year, and just keep up the great work.
All right, Jonathan, that's great. Please be in touch, and I've really enjoyed this. It's been a lot of fun.
For disclosures, John Bartlett is long UTES and UTG. I, Jonathan List, don't have positions in any of the funds or stocks discussed in today's show. If you've been enjoying Let's Talk ETFs, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or whichever podcast platform you prefer. And if you find this podcast useful, please consider leaving a review on one of those platforms so that other investors can discover it. You can also find this podcast on SeekingAlpha.com by typing Let's Talk ETFs into the search bar at the top of the site.